Television networks offer a truckload of popular unscripted programs, some of which lampoon working-class white Southern culture. Think Here Comes Honey Boo Boo and Duck Dynasty. They are popular. Our TV critic Eric Deggans has been wondering why it's so easy to start up shows that exploit stereotypes of white people.
MTV tried cashing in on the redneck TV trend with its own hyped-up platform for young Southern kids behaving badly, Buck Wild. And this is what it took to get it off the air.
Budding reality star Shane Gandy was discovered dead in his SUV, the victim of accidental carbon monoxide poisoning. Now, 1 week later, MTV is making the bombshell decision to cancel his hit show, Buck Wild.
Gandy was the star of a so-called reality TV show that played like a Southern fried version of Jersey Shore. It stars a dim-witted crew of young people in West Virginia drinking hard and riding pickup trucks through ditches filled with mud.
Oh, shit! Carrie, you ever been mudding?
Yeah, I used to get mud all the time in high school.
Oh, yeah? Well, you ain't never been mudding with me.
Small wonder some locals complain the show was a black mark on West Virginia. It highlighted oversexed, undereducated kids whose favorite pastimes included joyriding inside construction equipment.
Oh, my.
Go, go, go.
Southern-based exploitation TV shows are only the beginning of reality TV's Caucasian cliches. There are the violent, in-your-face Italian ladies in VH1's Mob Wives.
I've poisoned people. I've shot them. I stabbed my last boyfriend in front of his mother.
The backwards rural kids wandering around New York City in TLC's Breaking Amish.
Dropped out of school early.
Third or fourth grader can probably read three times better than I can.
And the lustful brides in My Big Fat American Gypsy Wedding.
My first husband was my third cousin. Our family believes in incest.
That's a big pile of the worst stereotypes about white working class people around. And here's the thing. There aren't nearly as many shows like this about African Americans or Latinos. Late last year, the Oxygen Channel tried to create a new one, developing a pilot featuring rapper Shawty Low.
So you guys, he might be known as a rapper, but here in Atlanta, he's known for having 11 kids and 10 baby mamas.
The backlash against this travesty was immediate and powerful.
Outrage and calls now for cancellation over a new reality show that's about to hit the airwaves. So here's what it's called, All My Baby's Mamas.
Radio personalities complained on air. Harsh coverage came from CNN and Fox News, and more than 30,000 protesters signed a petition against the show on change.org. And it worked. Oxygen announced it wouldn't develop the series. So why haven't these other shows stereotyping white people seen protests just as strong? I suspect it's because too many folks see stereotypes as a problem mostly for people of color. We've got lots of practice criticizing degrading images of black and brown people. Activists know how to gather the news stories, book the media appearances, and assemble the petitions to press their case. Advertisers get nervous, and programmers think twice. What many forget is it can be just as easy to stereotype white working-class folks, and just as hard to scrub those stereotypes off our TV screens.
Eric Deggans, regular guest here, and TV and media critic for the Tampa Bay Times.
It's been more than eight decades since Showboat, the seminal masterpiece created by Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein II, premiered on the stage here in Washington, D.C. Well, now Showboat is back in Washington in a lush production put on by the Washington National Opera. NPR's Nina Totenberg, who loves music as much as the law, has this report.
Based on Edna Ferber's epic best-selling novel, Showboat was nothing like the frothy musicals of the time. Though the story is about a traveling showboat that plays to audiences along the Mississippi River, the plot focuses on serious subjects: racial injustice, alcoholism, abandonment. Panoramic in scale, the show spans 40 years from 1885 in the South, not long after the Civil War, to the Roaring Twenties in Chicago. And displayed in all their glory are some of the most beautiful love songs of the 20th century.
Fish gotta swim, and birds gotta fly. I gotta love one man till I die.
pioneered in merging music and plot, integrating them for the first time to provide a seamless transition. Lyricist Oscar Hammerstein, just 31 years old, worked closely with composer Jerome Kern to replicate Ferber's sweeping narrative. In a 1950s interview, Hammerstein described how he used the Mississippi River as the thread to hold all the plot elements together.
I thought that we lacked something to make it cohesive, so I wanted to keep the spirit of Edna's book. And the one focal influence I could find was the river, because she had quite consciously brought the river into every important turn in the story, the Mississippi. So I decided to write a theme, a river theme.
That's Morris Robinson singing the role of Joe in the current production, directed by Francesca Zambello, who pushed and prodded to bring Showboat back.
I really was drawn to it because of the issues, and I feel that we have been able to convey to people the fact that the issues of race are still very much with us today.
Color is indeed a key underlying theme throughout the drama. Take Julie, the Showboat's star act.
Julie is the fulcrum of the show because she brings the dramatic issue that changes everything.
She's secretly biracial and married to a white man, a marriage that is a crime in Mississippi and much of the rest of the country. Even before Julie is forced to leave the boat, the Showboat's cook and Uber mother, Queenie, senses misery's coming. This beautiful number was cut from the original production for time, but Francesca Zambello restored it and more.
The theme of misery you hear not only with Queenie and all the women working, but it also weaves its way underneath the dialogue. Every time Julie speaks after that, it becomes her sadness and her secret.
Zambello sees Showboat as timeless, its themes recurring in American life over and over again. True, there are no laws against interracial marriage anymore, but as Showboat plays at the Kennedy Center this month, the Supreme Court, just a couple of miles away, is considering questions of same-sex marriage, affirmative action, and voting rights, while Congress focuses on how we as a nation treat immigrants.
To do this kind of work that has such deep social underpinnings to it and really speaks about social change is, I think, rare in music theater. And if you wrote this musical today, I'm not sure that it would get on.
Showboat, of course, is first and foremost entertainment. It's spectacle with joyous dancing, romance, and the pathos of love found, lost, and found again. Well, perhaps. In Zambello's production, the ending is not as happy as in the original. It's more ambiguous. But in the meantime, hearts flutter, audience members hold hands, reach for their handkerchiefs, and leave the theater singing the many songs that remain standards long after the show that inspired them has been forgotten by younger generations. As director Zambello observes, most people don't know the context of these songs anymore.
And most of them really have a strong dramatic context and a meaning behind them.
A meaning that was all too apparent to the first audience that saw Showboat in 1927. It sat in stunned silence when the final curtain came down, and only after a moment or two began to applaud. Today, the themes of Showboat are more painful than shocking for a modern audience, but history is painful because it remains part of our national genetic code. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
Oh, You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
This Sunday, HBO premieres the new comedy series Family Tree. It was co-created by Christopher Guest, director of Best in Show and other mockumentaries. Our TV critic, David Bianculli, has this review.
Christopher Guest, co-creator with Jim Pittock of the new HBO comedy series Family Tree, obviously is having a good time making this show. And it's contagious. It's several shows in one, and every element is a self-assured little delight. Christopher Guest, of course, has made a career, quite an impressive one, out of marching to his own comedy drummer. As an actor, his standout bizarro roles include the evil six-fingered count in The Princess Bride, the clueless heavy metal musician Nigel in This Is Spinal Tap, and a series of memorable characters in a brief but inspired stint on Saturday Night Live. As a writer and director, he amassed a batch of giddily original comedy films, movies with tightly scripted outlines, but lots of room for improvisation. If you've seen one, you may have seen them all, because they're habit-forming and they're that good. A Mighty Wind, Waiting for Guffman, Best in Show, for your consideration. And now there's Family Tree, which takes the approach Guest uses in his films and applies it to television. The result is a different flavor of sitcom. As original in its way as Curb Your Enthusiasm by Larry David, Louie by Louis C.K., and Extras by Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant. Like Extras, Family Tree contains little mini-parodies of TV series rather than films. Like Curb, it's full of lively improvised scenes. And like Louie, it seems to be able to go in any direction at all. Family Tree is about a 30-year-old British man named Tom Chadwick, who inherits an old chest when a relative dies. Its contents lead him on a quest to explore his own family tree, a trail that eventually takes him to America and a bunch of relatives he never knew existed. Tom is played by Chris O'Dowd, who's been so good recently in both Bridesmaids and HBO's Girls. The American relatives, in episodes I haven't seen yet, will be played by some of Christopher Guest's usual cohorts, including Fred Willard, Don Lake, Kevin Pollak, and Ed Begley Jr. Meanwhile, in the first four episodes set in Britain, which I have seen, the scene stealers are led by Michael McKean, another Spinal Tap bandmate, as Tom's dad. There's also Nina Conti, who in real life is the daughter of actor Tom Conti, playing Tom's sister, who carries around an ever-present hand puppet, a little monkey with a very bad attitude. She's hilarious, and like so much of this series, completely unpredictable. The beauty of Family Tree is that it can lead almost anywhere. Early on, a mysterious vintage photo of Tom's great-grandfather seems to suggest a Chinese heritage because of the way he's dressed and because of its inscrutable inscription. But Tom takes it to an antique photo expert who examines it more closely and sets Tom off in a different direction entirely. Listen to the looseness of the dialogue here, one of the most enjoyable aspects of this show.
The best what?
I think it says to the best Nancy do in love.
Yeah, that's a bit funny.
I think it's
God, man, I'm just so
homosexual
bad.
Thing. See, but I don't... It might be called gay code.
To the best...
Nancy do.
It's not... No, that's Nanky Poo. Nanky Poo is a character in the Mikado. So this isn't a Chinese person. It's a Japanese person. Well, it's not a Japanese person. It's an English person playing a Japanese person. Oh, it's an actor. You know the Mikado?
I don't.
Oh, it's by Gilbert and Sullivan.
A musical or something?
Well, it's a kind of an operatory thing, I think they call him. It's Nanky Poo.
He's just a teabag.
And he's in love with Yum Yum. And Yum Yum is with somebody else, Coco, I think.
Are you drunk right now?
Oh, it's absolutely bonkers. You couldn't follow it.
It's like a foreign Teletubbies.
Family Tree is a quiet, consistent treat. It's interesting to learn that Christopher Guest has both American and British ancestry, as Tom seems to learn he has. But Family Tree isn't at all autobiographical. And that's good, because this 8-episode series is open-ended. Its first 4 episodes were shot in England, and the next 4 in the United States. But after that, if this series is renewed, who knows? Not even Christopher Guest. He's making up Family Tree as he goes along. But Christopher Guest has proven time and again that he's superb at doing precisely that.
David Bianculli is founder and editor of the website TV Worth Watching, and he teaches TV and film history at Rowan University in New Jersey. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at NPR Fresh Air and on Tumblr at nprfreshair.tumblr.com. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, John Myers, Heidi Simon, Teresa Madden, and Yowei Shaw. John Sheehan directed today's show. WHYY's chief content officer is Christine Dempsey. I'm Terry Gross.
And now it's time for Back Talk. That's where we lift the curtain on what's happening in the Tell Me More blogosphere. Editor Ahmad Omar is back with us. What's going on today, Ahmad?
Hey, Michelle. How's it going? We got a lot of emails this week about a conversation you had about the rapper Danny Brown. Now, if you missed it, there was this conversation about whether he was sexually assaulted by one of his fans at a concert. This woman in the crowd performed a sexual act on him, and there was a big debate about whether it was consensual or he was the victim of a sexual assault. Now, our panel mainly said that he may well have been sexually assaulted, but that's not the response that we got from listeners, Michelle. A lot of people wrote in with comments like this one from Don Dupree of Detroit. He says, "I thought that everyone saying he was sexually assaulted was pretty messed up. I know females that have went through hell because they were hurt in that way, and I just feel it was unfair to them. I understand where everyone was coming from on the consent front, but there are so many people who get forced into acts that ruin their lives."
Thank you, Don, and thanks to everybody who wrote in on this subject. We got a lot of responses on email and also a lot on Twitter, so there's a lot to talk about there. I just want to take a minute to mention that I appreciate all the emails and tweets I received in response to the essay I wrote earlier this week about my brother. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, we did get a lot of tweets about that, Michelle, and one that really exemplified all of them came from Kristen Crane from Providence, Rhode Island. She says, "The Can I Just Tell You segment of Tell Me More is always a favorite part for me. I just want to give Michelle a hug some days, like today."
Oh, thank you. I will gratefully receive that. We also got email about a story we covered yesterday, right?
Yeah, so we talked about the immigration bill that's being proposed in the Senate by the so-called Gang of Eight, and economist Julianne Malveau had this to say.
"The fact is that the way we allow people to immigrate has been patently unfair just across the board. Michelle, Canadian people immigrate by walking across the border, and because they're white people, they are not subject to the kind of racial profiling that, let's say, a Latino is."
That really got the letters flowing from our Canadian listeners. Pat Menon from Ontario told us this. "First, Canadians are proud that they're a very diverse nation composed of citizens of all races and colors. For example, in 2006, 47% of Toronto's population reported themselves as being part of a visible minority. Second, he says, crossing the border for a shopping trip or vacation requires proper documentation. And he says, third, this is an example of how little our closest neighbor knows about our country. I do hope that you will take a moment to correct these misconceptions."
Okay, consider it done. Thank you, Pat. Anything else?
Yeah, so we talked about the first woman on the FBI list of most wanted terrorists earlier this week. She goes by the name Assata Shakur. Now, our guest said that Shakur's brother, a man by the name of Mutulu Shakur, helped her escape from prison. Well, it turns out they're not really brother and sister, even though that's a common misconception. There is an interesting connection, though. That man, Mutulu Shakur, is the late rapper Tupac Shakur's stepfather.
Okay, thanks for that, Ahmad. And of course, remember at Tell Me More, the conversation never ends. To tell us more, you can visit us online at npr.org/tellmemore. Please remember to leave us your name. We're on Twitter. Just look for Tell Me More NPR. Thanks, Ahmad.
Thank you.
Coming up, you've seen Charles Ramsey just about everywhere on television talking about how he helped save the kidnapped victims in Cleveland and why he never had reason to suspect the accused kidnapper, Ariel Castro.
"Nothing exciting about him. Well, until today."
But the new reports about Charles Ramsey's less-than-pristine past change what you think about him. The Barbershop Guys weigh in on that and other news of the week. That's ahead on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.